5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
GTR listeners, the official Gamertag Radio store is now open on TeePublic. Go to store.gamertagradio.com. That's store.gamertagradio.com. Represent us. You could buy t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, posters, stickers, and much, much more. We are planning to add more designs coming very soon to the store, but as of right now, we have a couple of designs available now, like I Love Gaming and the GTR Gamertag Radio logo and so on. It's pretty cool. So go right now to store.gamertagradio.com. That's store.gamertagradio.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to episode 765 here at Gamertag Radio, and this is your host, Danny. And joining me this week, we have the whole Gamertag Radio crew. Let's start out with Pete. Pete, what's going on, man?
Drinking my cup of coffee this morning. The Dubs came back yesterday, showed improved. I keep playing God of War. God, it's such a good game. It's been a good weekend, dude.
That's good. So you haven't finished the game at all?
No, I have not. I don't even know what part I am. I don't even know where in relationship to like 50%, 40, 30. I don't even know where I'm at right now. And I don't care. Okay. I'm just enjoying the game.
Yeah. Game is good, man. Make sure to do the side quest. I think it helps build your character and also your son. Because it gets really difficult later on, man.
Oh, no. I just finally got Atreus's armor and stuff like that. So it's like building him up. And, you know, I've been just playing, just taking my time with it. I'm kind of like been Paris with Witcher, right? You know, he just plays it, right? And so that's what I've been doing. I've just been like, yeah, stop. Let me just jump on God of War. And I'll jump on God of War for like 2-3 hours and then just disappear. And then, you know, come back for air. It's just been fun. It's just a great experience overall. So much fun.
Yeah. Actually, Pete, the past 2 days I've been playing a lot of Division. Been doing a lot of like the...
I saw that.
Global events. Yeah, yeah. It's good. 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 Also, joining us this week, we have Paris in the house, man. What's going on, Paris?
Hey, good morning. And speaking of the Division, that's something I plan to actually play once we get off of this podcast today, because I want to start jumping back into it a little bit on the PC. Just kind of advance where I am. You know the conversation we had offline already the other day, but yeah. I think I want to jump back in, start playing a little bit more, because what I'm starting to realize, look, Cyberpunk 2077 aside, I kind of almost think this is Division 2 might be my most anticipated game to see what it's going to be at E3 that we know of. Obviously there are surprises and rumors and everything, but of games that we know are coming, this might be my most anticipated to see what it's going to be, you know, for which I expect March 2019, by the way, but for when it when it comes out. So I kind of just want to play again and see, because the bottom line on that, I know we're just jumping right into it, is if they can just take that sequel and just build off of what they've done since that 1.8 update, like you just mentioned, the global events, and obviously they got, what was that, the survivor mode, just things like that. And then say, hey, here's some other new in-game activities that we're going to add into it. I, it's a layup. It's just like I used to say about Destiny 2 a year ago. To me, that would be a layup because that's what fans of this game are going to want to see. Not to mention, this gives Massive a chance to fix a lot of the bugs and some of the issues that the original game have had. And if they can demonstrate that and show that at E3 and just moving forward through the summer and into the holiday leading up to launch, I think they're going to get a lot of people on board with it. Because, again, obviously I come from the Destiny community. There are a lot of people in the Destiny community that are looking at what the Division's going to do because they've either played it already and they've liked what they played and it's something else to do, or they're curious and they want to see, all right, show me something. Show me why I should leave the game that I'm currently playing right now that has all these issues and jump over to your game. So it's kind of where I am, man. So I'm like I said, I'm excited to see what's going to be at E3.
Yeah. I just got back from Montreal. By the way, that was my first time going to Canada. It was cool. I had a blast over there, man. So more details about my trip, hopefully soon. I'll talk about it very, very soon. But it was a lot of fun over there, man. Never been to Canada. You guys been to Canada? I know Pete has.
Yeah, I've been there several times. Right? It's never a dull moment in Canada.
Yeah, it's dope. It's dope. So shout out to Ubisoft for inviting me and stuff over there, man. Really cool, man. So more details coming very, very soon. All right, so head over to GamerTagRadio.com. Also post your comments and feedback. You can share our content, share with your friends, family, just spread the word about GTR. Also, you can find us in different podcast apps. You can find us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories. Make sure to subscribe. And if you get the chance, post a review. It will help us out big time. Also, in a couple of weeks, we're going to E3. We have a lot of stuff planned for E3. A lot of surprises. A lot of surprises. I'm excited for this year's E3 coverage. We have a lot of interviews booked already. So are you guys pumped up for E3, this year's coverage, or what?
You asking me or the audience?
You guys. I'm asking you guys. How I'm asking the audience if I'm talking to you guys. Remember, we don't interact with Twitch.
I know. I'm just teasing. I'm just messing with you.
Yeah. You're a dork.
I'm looking forward to it. I know we've got some challenges this year, obviously. I think just from looking at the calendar, we've got a large variety of things that we're going to be covering. And I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, there's a lot of titles that have a lot of, that have potential to do big things. And so it's exciting to see those. It's exciting to see some of the stuff that we visited last year and see how they've progressed or regressed. We don't know. So it's going to be a good show. I think it's going to be a good overall E3. I'm curious to see how the ESA has matured in dealing with the public crowd factor. I'm hoping it's for the better. I mean, obviously I think everybody from the industry, is hoping for the better. I'm sure Reed and everybody else, they've put on their big boy britches and they're attempting to tackle it. So we'll see how they go.
What about you, Paris?
Well, I mean, this E3 is going to be a little bittersweet for me because I'm going, but I'm not going at the same time. I know we've talked about this a little bit. I don't think I've fully said it on the podcast, but I'll be there like I'm going to go to EA Play Saturday, right? I'll be there all day Saturday. I'll be there all day Sunday for Xbox stuff and some other things that we got going on that day. I won't be around until, cause I'm working. So I have to go to work. So I will not be at E3 proper during the day. I'll be around Monday night. I'm probably not going to be around at all on Tuesday. And then Wednesday, because look, I'm just going to tell you straight up, I got an appointment to go see Cyberpunk 2077, so I'm not missing that. And I'm going to leave work early and make sure I make that appointment on Wednesday, and then I'll be around Wednesday night. And then Thursday for me is TBD. So there is potential that I only step on the show floor once and only for a couple hours on Wednesday. So we'll see. But like I said, I'll be around for some stuff. You'll hear my voice and impressions on certain things, but the traditional E3 where we're there and I'm running around the show floor, just simply not going to be there. But, you know, hey, I said this, you know, a couple months ago when I knew I was taking this job. So it's not too much of a shock.
Yeah. And, in the past you know, I've done E3 by myself, so it's like we've been through the worst of the worst, you know, in the past. But I think we could do it. I think the stuff that we got planned for this year, I think we'll be fine. We'll be fine. We'll be there also to support Paris too, man.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
EA finally revealed Battlefield 5. So I was watching, because the thing is, I was in Montreal, so I couldn't watch the live stream during the reveal and stuff. I watched it after I got back to Miami. And I'm going to be real with you guys. I think that I enjoyed more Activision's press conference that they revealed, you know, Call of Duty Black Ops 4. You know, it was certain things that I know they could have done better, but I feel like having, you know, the devs there talking to the audience, interacting with them, you could hear the crowd was like excited about the game and stuff. You know, everybody's going to have different opinions about, you know, about the game itself, or like Call of Duty and Battlefield and stuff. But I'm just saying, like, overall, like the structure and everything, I think that Activision did a better job revealing the game. Because I watched the Battlefield 5 revealed and I was extremely bored. They had, what's his name, man? The host of the Daily Show.
Trevor Noah.
I messed up his name. Anyways, so the thing is that it felt like they were trying to do like the Daily Show type vibe, and the crowd was very quiet and it was awkward. I just didn't like the presentation. It seemed like it was very boring overall, the reveal. The trailer, I did like the trailer. I did like certain things that they announced about the game, like there's no loot boxes, there's no more premium pass, none of that stuff, which is great, right? But the things I've been reading about the game, I heard that they had influencers there, and I believe they had like a 3-hour pre-event before they went live, and I heard that itself of the developers talking to the influencers, revealing everything about the game, I heard that was better than the actual live stream. So I don't know why they're, you know, companies are still depending so much on just having like these celebs on camera to reveal like their games. Like, I feel like they could have just done this without having a celeb on camera, man. You know what I'm saying? So I'm excited to try out the game during, you know, EA Play, you know, right before E3. I try it out for sure. I'm very curious about the game and stuff, but overall, I think Activision did a better job, in my opinion. But I just want to know your thoughts about the game for you guys.
I had no problem with Trevor Noah's delivery and how he presented the reveal. I'm a fan, obviously, of his show. And I think it added a little bit to it. His commentary about him being a gamer, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, I don't know the person, so we can only take it at face values for what we saw. I don't know if he actually is a gamer, and you know, he's played Battlefield in the past. He sounded like he has, because you know, he used some of the terminology. But again, that could have been scripted and part of the discussion on the reveal. Mm-hmm. Setting that aside and just going towards the game, I liked some of it. I like the game itself. I mean, obviously, you know, the CGI and the gameplay that they showed, that's scripted, right? You know, they're going to make sure that they deliver the expectation and so on and so forth to the gamer that they want to put out. And it looked good. Mm-hmm. I liked the message that we got from some of the creative directors and the art directors and stuff in the panel. So that was fun. In following some of my preferred streamers and content creators like Stone Mountain, Stody, and so on and so forth. I think Drifter had a really good one as well. They're putting across the right message. I just hope that, and it's great for streamers and content creators, but I just wonder if they start to do that and they're catering more to those versus, the large scale fans. So it'll be interesting to see. Again, I like what I saw, Obviously, there's some controversy, and I guess we'll talk about that after, you know, we'll talk about this in a little bit. But we'll see. I mean, I kind of have a feeling that the Call of Duty and the, you know, Battlefield titles are starting to get a little long in the tooth, and they need to start doing things that draw in other players. But we'll see. We'll see.
I mean, at least it has campaign, right? Because people were saying that Call of Duty doesn't have campaign, but this one has campaign. So, Paris, what about you, man?
You're muted.
Oh no! They're sticking with the war stories that they introduced in Battlefield 1 for the campaign, which I enjoyed. I actually liked. I thought that was a great way to do it. The biggest thing to come out of that is the combined arms on the multiplayer side, which is basically the 4-player cooperative mode. Almost their quote unquote. I don't want to call it like a raid or anything, but more like
horde mode.
Yeah, I guess kind of, but you do have a kind of quote unquote boss at the end where it gets harder, whatever. But you know, it's an in-game activity to be able to play in a game, which I think will be interesting. We'll obviously have to see how it plays out when we get hands-on with it. But I like that they're at least trying this instead of just doing the same 64-player mode that they've traditionally done, which is also there as well. Battlefield for me has always been a game that I've enjoyed it when I play it, but I never feel the pull to go play it, if that makes sense. Like, I don't play Battlefield, put it down, and then wake up the next morning and go, you know what? I need to jump back into Battlefield. I've never had that pull to it. So I know they're doing World War II here. Maybe this could be that game for them. I don't know, but I do agree with you, Pete, that the traditional formula that they've done with Battlefield is getting a little long in the tooth. Obviously now having a female protagonist is great. You know, all the people that are complaining is just social media ridiculousness. In my opinion, have we forgotten that the best Shepard to play in Mass Effect has always been female Shepard? You know what I'm saying? Right. So it's like, I don't even know where that outrage is coming from, that people are bent out of shape that we have a female protagonist, but whatever. I'm completely fine with it. We need to see more of that. We need to see more women and people of color, you know, represented in a positive light in gaming as it is. So, you know, whatever. I'm glad that DICE is doing this. Overall, I think this will be a solid game coming out of DICE, coming out of EA. My concern is where it's launching and it just getting buried, because it's obviously going up against its number one competitor of Call of Duty. And then you got Red Dead coming right behind it. So it'll be curious to see. Like, I think loyal Battlefield fans will go pick this up. I don't think that's going to change. But I don't see them being able to get new people into the series, at least early on. Because like I said, there's just way too many other games that are going to be fighting for your attention in October. And I think it's going to get lost in the shuffle in that way. So we'll see. Hopefully it has a good word of mouth. Hopefully his combined arms is good enough. And, you know, people will want to go explore it and go pick it up. And then obviously the other great thing that they're doing is, you know, there's no quote unquote premium DLC content. You get it all, which is great, which I think is another mode. I think was Titanfall the first game to do that, I think, on a big scale. But anyways, I love that this is where we're headed with that kind of content now, the DLC content, where you don't have to worry about getting left behind because you didn't buy a certain map pack or anything like that. You're going to get everything.
Well, I think the freemium model of supporting the game after the fact with non-game affecting loot, like, you know, clear, you know, like gear and clothing and stuff like that, has proven that you don't need to do the premiums, you know, the premium paid services. I mean, hell, we just saw that alert that came out earlier this week about Epic. Was it, you know, like, was it 325 billion or something like that, or some crazy number? 325 million. I don't know. I can't remember if it's million or billion.
3.5 billion.
Yeah, okay. $3.5 billion annually. Just from non-game affecting loot, you know, DLC in the form of skins and stuff like that. So the opportunity is there. And that was the big thing that always pushed, you know, these season passes and these premium packs was that, you know, the developers and publishers wanted a way to be able to support the game after launch. And I think these new opportunities being done, especially, you know, being, I guess you could say the flag bearer now is Epic with Fortnite. It can be done. I know there's other titles have done it, but you know, right now the standard bearer right now is Fortnite, and it's proving it can be done. It can be it's a successful model and it works. So shout out to them. Shout out, you know, I'm kind of glad that there's no longer going to be private servers, because private servers was kind of annoying. And let me correct that. I don't know if they're still going to be doing private servers or not. I know the last game private servers were still around. I don't recall if they mentioned that in the reveal, if they talked about private servers at all. So maybe that's something we can go back to, but mm-hmm. I mean, that's always been a question as well. So it'll be curious to see how they handle that. If that's going to be part of that, or if they're just going to, you know, scuttle that overall.
Question to you guys. When should this game come out? Because, man, no matter what time they release it, they're still going to be competing with, you know, with Black Ops and also Red Dead and other games that hopefully is going to also come out around that time. Like, I think this year there's going to be way too many games coming out, man. Like during the holiday season between
October
September
16th.
All the way to October 16th.
Didn't I just say this?
I thought you said October. You said October, but I can't remember. I couldn't hear
October
the
19th.
Date,
but never mind.
19th. 19th. Go ahead. 19th. Okay. But what I'm saying, do you think that's even the right time to release the game, though? Because
why not? It's the time range that they've always released. It's always been the last 2 to 3 weeks of October. So I don't see why this should be any different. Yes, they're going to be going up against COD and Red Dead. But as Paris said, they have a defined base of players that are going to be buying the game. I think it's going to be touch and go, especially in my opinion with Red Dead Redemption, because there's, I think the anticipation for that title is probably larger than anything. And then Call of Duty. It's going to sell regardless.
Yeah. Oof. Sounds a little challenging, but I guess, I mean, to get the new players, that's going to be tough for any company around that time that releases the game in October. So I don't know. Crazy. By the way, Paris, I know we talked about this in the past. The Wolf Among Us, we play this. I played it on Xbox and also had it on my iPad. Season 1. Great game, by the way, from Telltale Games. I know you love that. You love that game too. P, you play that Among Us?
Yes, I enjoyed it. And by the way, just I want to go back. Red Dead Redemption is going to be out on the 26th. Call of Duty Black Ops is out on October 12th. So if anything, if there's, it's going to be what, less than a week after, it's going to come out less than a week after Call of Duty Black Ops 4. So that, if anything, that is its competition for its launch. And then 10 plus days later is when Red Dead Redemption 2 comes out. So there's a small buffer.
Okay. All right.
But going back to Wolf Among Us 2, I love that game. Admittedly got the last, you know, the late pass on that. I know Paris loved it when it came out. I think he had that on his top five for the year that it came out. His top five favorite games of the year.
He did. Yeah.
I enjoyed it. So I'm looking.
So they're
forward
working.
To it.
They're working. They've been working on season two. So the game got delayed to 2019. You know, I think that's good. Take your time, because I really enjoyed the story of the first game. So your thoughts about the game getting delayed for next year?
I love how you started off asking me a question and I never got to answer it at all.
Because Pete cut me off. He cut me off. He started talking about Call of Duty and all that stuff, the dates.
No, but going all jokes aside, going to what you're saying, yeah, The Wolf Among Us, I loved it. It was one of my favorite games. God, what year was that now? Was that 2015? Up in there somewhere. Anyways, the point is, I love that game. It was a fantastic game from Telltale. I've really been waiting for the sequel. And honestly, if they need to delay it to get it right, delay it. That's how I look at it. I want a solid story. coming from that universe, get more Big B and just everything from that fairy tale fable universe. And yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait for them to continue that story and just the characters that they've built up in that first game and see the, where it heads next.
2013.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. Wow. 2013. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Doesn't seem that long ago
at all. It doesn't seem that long for me because I didn't play it until really late last year. But so for me, it's still kind of fresh in my brain. But yeah, it was originally launched in 2013. That's insane. Really good.
Yeah. Pretty dope. All right. So another game that's coming out later this year is Shadow of the Tomb Raider. This game, according to the developers, is going to be the most difficult game in this series. I know we talked about the game a couple weeks ago where they decided to remove some of the puzzles of the game. So I was like, man, I really enjoy that part of playing, you know, Tomb Raider and also God of War, you know, the couple puzzles and stuff. But now that they said that this is going to be the most difficult one without the puzzles, I'm curious now. I'm very curious about the game. I know we're going to try to play the game during E3. Your thoughts about this change and also making this the most difficult one of the series?
I'm all for it. I think we lack a certain difficulty in gaming these days. So to add that to it and actually make it difficult and have to earn the things that you're doing, why not? Let's go that route. You know, everything doesn't have to be casual and cater to the lowest denominator. Sometimes we need difficulty in gaming, you know, to push, you know, just to push yourself, you know, even in a single player game, you know, why not? You know, everything doesn't have to be, let's make it as easy as possible so you can get to the end and get your participation trophy. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes go earn that trophy if you really want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, didn't a lot of people complain about Cuphead? It was too difficult,
yeah,
and stuff.
There's your classic example right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get over it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man. You know, the thing is, you die, keep on going until you finally finish that level or boss or whatever, you know what I'm saying? So that's what I did with Cuphead, and I finished it. My nephew, 6 years old, finished it, you know? So your thoughts, Pete, about this? Totally, I know you actually going to play the game too, right? At E3?
Yeah. Yeah. I have an opportunity. It is one of my appointments to go check it out. Looking forward to it. And I agree with Paris. I don't think it's right that franchises adjust their difficulties to cater to a lighter in order to invite a bigger audience. I don't think that's a good thing for games. I think if anything, leave it up to the player, maybe make it as a plus after completing the game on normal. So it'll allow you to go. I would love to be able to see it even drop in and give us like a realistic difficulty, kind of like Black Ops 3, where you get shot with one bullet, you dead.
That's tough. That's really tough right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. But and hell, I mean, I think stuff like that goes back to like World at War, where you got shot with one bullet, you died, you know? And I remember that first scene where you're going down the mountain, and God knows me and my friends on co-op played that for hours, just trying to get down the mountain, you know, as a team. So I'm all for it. I don't think they're going to get rid of puzzles altogether. I think they're still going to have it. I think it's just going to be the way they deliver the puzzles that defines that game. And I think I'm all for it. I appreciate it. I can't wait.
All right. So we're going to go now with our Miss Leo E3 predictions for this episode. And this time we're going to talk about PlayStation. So yes, Miss Leo E3 predictions.
Hey, darling, this is certified psychic Miss Leo. Now, I can usually tell you things about your future by using the power of my tarot cards. But when it comes to video games, only the guys at Gamertag Radio can give you the E3 predictions. You hear me?
All right, so PlayStation. That's one of the top threes right here. And I know we've been talking about it now for a couple of weeks, but I think we should talk about it, man, about their press conference, their announcements, and so on. So who would like to go first?
Sure.
PlayStation.
I will go first. And to no one's surprise, let's see. They're going to show Spider-Man. They're going to show They're going to show, what was the Ghost of Enya? They're going to show, is that how you say it? I think that's how you say
Ghost
it.
Ghost of Tsushima.
Tsushima, thank you. They're going to show Death Stranding and Last of Us 2. And I think they'll show some, they're going to show some VR stuff. And I think, Miss Leo, they will have one mystery IP that don't expect to see it anytime soon. I'm talking 2020, 2021. They're going to debut a new IP to kind of end it. Because look, they're going to build everything around those four games. We know it. So obviously, they'll have some indie games they'll probably show. Obviously, all the third-party games they'll show, VR stuff. And then they're going to have one exclusive IP from another internal Sony studio, and it'll be a teaser for it. Oh, and they're going to show Shenmue 3 there. We'll see Shenmue 3 gameplay. There's my predictions.
Okay. All right. All right. I got this. I've been doing some studying over the last couple of days in preparation of this, because I was looking forward to it. I think we can ignore the known stuff. You know, like Paris said, Last of Us 2, I think, is the only thing we didn't see of the titles that you mentioned. So I think we're going to see those stuff that we haven't heard a lot about. Shadows Die Twice. That was the trailer that they played at the end of last year's press conference. And that's from Software. I think that is going to be what becomes Bloodborne 2. We're going to see a new remaster project from Bluepoint. And I don't know I don't know what title it's going to be, because they're the ones that did Shadow of the Colossus. I don't know which of the three titles that I'm about to drop is it going to be. Is it going to be a Metal Gear Solid 20th anniversary remaster? Is it going to be Demon's Souls, the 10th anniversary remaster, or Eco? It's been a minute since we've seen an Eco title. And I think if there's anybody that can drop a solid remaster for 2018, 2019-ish, I think Eco will be the right one for that. They may have mentioned last year of a title called Concrete Genie, which kind of has me kind of curious and interested. So I think we'll see something like that. I think we'll finally see the Final Fantasy VII remake that Danny, you know, fainted 3 years ago for at the press conference. I think they're going to talk about more PlayStation Plus stuff, because they need to bring out some more incentives for people to add on to that membership. I think we'll start seeing VR titles being added to the PS Plus membership program. And then I think we're going to see, my Miss Leo is going to be Darksiders 3.
Is that a let me dream, or that's more of actual prediction?
No, that's just a prediction. That's not a let me dream. Because I'm not like, I don't have a hard on for it. I just think that's that's the one title that they haven't been talking about lately, that I think they're going to drop that, similar to the way they did last year with Shadows Die Twice. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to drop that at the end, which is going to be Darksiders 3.
Okay. So originally I thought that the new Borderlands that we're going to announce it there, but scrap that. That's not going to happen anymore. But I do think that Sony is going to announce a new hardware at this press conference. I know you guys probably saying, hardware, really? Yes, I think they're going to bring back the classic PlayStation, the original PlayStation, similar to like the Nintendo Classic and the Super Nintendo Classic. I think Sony's going to do the same thing with their first console and have maybe 15 to 20 games available inside the system, and they're going to announce it at the press conference. I know there's been rumors going on now for like the past few days or week or so about it, and I think it's going to happen at their press conference. Third party. Yes, of course, Destiny is going to be there. Call of Duty, of course. That's two Activision games there. I think they're going to show very short trailers of that. Third party. I'm thinking who else they will. I think Bethesda, whatever Bethesda showed at their press conference, I think they're going to show it at this press conference, at Sony's press conference. I don't see Ubisoft showing anything at Sony's press conference. And I think that's about it. I know you guys talked about the four titles, of course. I'm a little bit worried that they talked about four of those games and no mentions about Dreams, which that title they've been working on for a while. I wonder why, but
yeah, I forgot about Dreams. Dreams will be there. Dreams will be there. Dreams will get a date, I think.
But you think they're going to show trailers and all that stuff? Because they didn't.
Well, they show trailers every year. I think they're going to finally show gameplay for it. It's got to be coming out soon, right? It's got to be. I'm talking about for 3 years. And you know,
same with Days Gone. Days Gone will get a showing there as well. I mean, I think that and Dreams are early 2019 games for them.
Does Days Gone have a date, or did that get pushed back?
No, it's been featured in Game Informer's had a big write up for it, and they've shown some gameplay, talked to lead game designer and all that. I mean, it's sounding like an early 2019 game, but it does not have an official date yet.
Actually, I could see Square Enix also maybe showing something there. Now, Kingdom Hearts. Do you think they're going to show Kingdom Hearts at the Sony PlayStation conference?
I think they'll probably see it on all three, maybe.
I think the fact that Square has their own press conference Monday morning, I think this is why I tried to avoid all the third-party stuff. I think a lot of the third-party stuff, you'll see it at Sony, you'll see it at Xbox and all that, but then the ones that have their own press conferences, that'll be where you get the full blowout information on it. Like, as an example, Anthem's going to get its full blowout at EA Play, and then I think at the Xbox press conference the next day they'll show it again, and by the way, here's the marketing exclusive content that you'll
console
get
exclusive
on Xbox. Something like that. Okay. Oh, and since we're on PlayStation, because we didn't address this at the top, not that I'm going to pat myself on the back and say I was right, because I did waffle on the date a little bit, but it is looking like PlayStation 5 is going to be 2021. Because remember, the news came out that, hey, PlayStation 4 is entering, it's the end of its life cycle. People freaked out on, oh my God, PlayStation 5 is coming this year. And I was like, nah, it ain't coming this year. I go, they have no incentive for it to come this year. It's probably 2021. And then sure enough, they've now come out and said, don't expect a new PlayStation until 2021, another 3 years.
Sean Layden even said, he's like, don't expect any conversation about hardware at E3. We're not talking about it.
No, they have zero incentive. I could see a scenario, and not this year, but I could see a scenario where we get a PS4 Pro Slim. I could see them remaking the Pro. But it's still going to be the Pro. It's not new hardware. You're not getting a PlayStation 5 for a while, because all these games that we're talking about right now are probably coming out within the next 2 years. And that brings you into 2019, 2020, right? So by the time we get to 2021, now let's have a conversation about, we'll have some cross-generation games, in that 2021 year. Like, I fully expect Guerrilla Games to have the Horizon Zero Dawn sequel at launch for PlayStation 5. It just makes sense. They've had plenty of time to work on it. It's obviously a huge IP for Sony now. And why not launch PS5 with that? That's going to get people to want to go run out and get a PlayStation 5 at that time.
Maybe that's when we'll finally see that Death Stranding.
Well, it's funny with Death Stranding, because, and maybe I'm crazy, but Death Stranding is a PlayStation exclusive.
Yeah.
Is that confirmed?
Yeah.
It is? Yeah, so it's a PlayStation exclusive.
I was never 100% sure with Kojima if it was exclusive or not, or they were just heavily leaning, obviously his relationship with Sony and everything, they were just heavily leaning on PlayStation to market it. But
They're publishing it. Sony's publishing it.
That's a big win for them. Huge.
But let me ask you this. Do you think that was a mistake for Sony to even mention about that, it's almost ending?
No.
PlayStation 4.
No, I think because the way the conversation came out, this wasn't Sean Latham or someone like that said it. Was another Sony exec saying it in a conversation and just not further elaborating, because he wasn't lying. It is entering the final stages of its life cycle, but that doesn't mean new hardware in the next year or the next 2 years. So then they obviously clarified and said, 3 years, because again, by the time we get to 2021, there's going to be well over 100 million PlayStation 4s out there. They have no incentive to try and take this user base and tell them, all right, take that hardware, retire it, go buy a new hardware. They have no incentive to do that at all. So they're going to milk this as long as they possibly can. And 2021, in my opinion, is the first date that we could potentially, like, I think probably like that February 2021, they have the reveal. Then obviously E3, they debut it, price it, date it for November 2021. Like I said, Horizon Zero Dawn's available at launch. Go from there.
Yeah, I can see that. Now, my question is
Xbox.
About Xbox. Yeah. I mean, so, Nintendo, they're fine. They're not gonna do anything. I think they'll be good. But should they release this the same time, before, after? I'm trying to figure it out, like, what Microsoft should do in a situation like this. Now, if they have the games, if they don't have the games, then don't even bother. So,
I don't know. I don't think they should do it based on what Sony is going to do. They should feel that
in the way they have to. In the way they have to, though,
Pete. Do they?
Yeah, it's their competition. Of course, they have to. It's part of the business competition.
But they've got the hardware out now. That's setting the gold standard for hardware in this space. They need to focus on titles, and titles isn't a 1 year over, you know, turnover time. That's something that's going to be a 2-3-4 year pipeline. And if we're in 2018, 2020, 2021 is when you're going to be talking about when these new IPs start to grow legs and start going out into the wild. So you focus on your titles and let the hardware come about as a result. When they start to focus more on hardware and start to try to guide the industry towards a specific hardware model or whatnot, is when they start to lose focus on what got them there in the first place. So I think you already know with your infrastructure is solid. You already know that your hardware concept is rock solid. Focus on your game title and your catalog and go from there. I think that's where you'll gain the success. Look at Sony. Sony's already got that down.
You know, I think a lot of people might not agree with me with this, but I think they should release this after Sony 2022.
That'd be a huge mistake on their part.
Really?
It would. They can't afford to lose that momentum. Again, let's just go back in history. Microsoft killed off the original Xbox One early so they could release the 360 a year before PlayStation 3. And they came in at a cheaper price, and that propelled them into winning that generation. Then we look at what happened this current generation. They both released at the same time, but PS4 was $100 cheaper. They had that momentum, and it's propelled them to where they are now. So if you then go to 2021, PlayStation 5 releases unopposed at $399, by the way, because that's another key thing. There's no way that Sony can release a PlayStation 5 any higher than $399, because they've already established with the PS4 and the Pro, that's the price, right? That's what you expect as a consumer, the new hardware to cost. So if they were to go to $500, which was the mistake that Xbox made with the One and the One X, in my opinion, you can't do that. So again, it releases 2021, PS5, $399, right? Unopposed, you get, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn, all these third-party games that come out for it for an entire calendar year before Xbox decides, hey guys, we're going to join the fight too, $399, and now we're catching up with all our games as well. You've already had a year head start for people that if they're going to invest their money, they've already continued to invest in PlayStation versus saying, all right, well, maybe I'll give Xbox a try this time. Xbox has, in my opinion, has to be their day one. They have to have a full lineup of games, and the price has to be the same and or cheaper than whatever PS5 is going to be at launch. And not to mention, for me anyways, because again, I've said this before, what's the point? Both of them better be 4K 60 day one, all their games. Or why are we even going to the next console generation? We've already established 4K 30 this generation. Don't make the mistake that both of them made in 2013 and not really change anything going into the next generation as far as technology and fidelity and all that goes, because that was, in my opinion, was the mistake both made in 2013, not having 1080p 60 day one at launch for that hardware, where if they would have waited another year for both, we probably would have had 1080p 60 for both of those consoles, which again is what the PS4 Pro and with the Xbox One X should, those should have been the consoles at launch back then. But that's just my opinion. What do I know? I
don't know. you mentioned about, you know, Xbox releasing this console first, but you never mentioned anything about the Ring of Death, because that was a huge mistake on their part too. And they survived it though. But they wasted a lot of money on that.
But what does that have to do with what I just said?
Does it have to be 4K 60? Can it be, would you be all right with 1440 60?
We're doing that right now.
Are they?
Xbox One X does that right now.
But does PlayStation 4 do 1440?
It can, it could. If they wanted to, they obviously choose that they're not going down that route. I mean, because you think about it, with the checkerboard rendering, a lot of these PS4 Pro games are native 1440p.
And then they get scaled up.
Yeah. So if PlayStation wanted to do 1440p, they could easily do it right now.
All right, so let's do fan.
I want to go back to this Red Ring of Death thing, because that doesn't make sense to me. What does that have to do with
you rushing it? You said that they were the first, but the reason why I mentioned that is because they rushed it. If they would have waited at least a year, they would have not had those problems, man.
I disagree in this sense that if they agreed, they rushed, and obviously the Red Ring of Death was an issue, cost them $1 billion to repair all those systems. But if they would have waited until 2006 and released at the same time as the PlayStation 3, don't you think they would not have gotten the momentum? They were the underdog back then. That was their way to get market share, was to, we come out first. We're HD. We're this. We're that. Whereas back then, PlayStation 2, it's what it is right now, where PlayStation 2 was dominating the market compared to what Xbox was doing, right? So that was their way to get an upper hand, was we're going to come out a year early, you know? So what I'm saying in this scenario is, I'm not saying the Xbox should try and beat PlayStation to the punch, but they damn sure better release at the same time, or you're going to lose momentum in that sense. Because this time, neither one of them would be rushing to put out a console in 2021. It's been 8 years by that point. So it's not a rush, but you better not extend it to, you're basically saying Xbox should wait 9 years before coming out with another console, a next generation console, where Sony's saying we're going to come out in 8. They've had a full head year start. They're going to continue to keep the market share that they've had. Xbox will lose momentum, the momentum that they already don't have. They'll lose even more if they were to wait another year, in my opinion.
I agree with you, Paris, but here's the thing. It all depends, in my opinion, what they show at this year's E3. If they don't have the games, and they don't have the roadmap, like you've been saying this now for a while now, then what's the point of releasing a new console if they don't have the games? So by them taking their time, not rushing it, they will also have better games. And at the same time, the system is not going to be rushed. You know what I'm saying? So that's the reason why I said that. So, all right, should we go fan mail now, or you want to say anything else, Paris, before we, just in case?
Wait, but why is that funny, though? I mean, like I said, I was just asking the question on Red Ring of Death, like how that was relevant to the conversation.
Okay, they rushed it. That's the reason you said they were first.
Let's go to fan mail. I don't feel like arguing this. Let's go to fan mail.
Oh, my God. All right.
I just don't understand why that was funny.
What? Forget it. It's all right.
Yeah.
All right. Here goes. All right. It's time for fan mail.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
All right. So we got a couple of voicemails.
Yep.
Play on this episode.
Here we go. Voicemail number one.
Hey, guys. This is Nelson calling from Carson City, Nevada. All I want to say is, Danny, what the gosh darn flipping heck are you on, my dude? Blackout mode will definitely be at E3, and I'll do you one better. They're going to announce the beta for August or September. I almost want to be bold enough to say that they're going to announce it and say, yo, go download the beta right now, have fun. But I'll cool my jets a little bit on that. Might be too soon. Anyways, keep up the great work, guys. Talk to you later.
Thanks for calling in. What do you think?
All right. This is not no hashtag let me dream. This is for you. Hashtag keep on waiting, because that's not going to happen. It's going to happen at Gamescom. That's the truth. You can say whatever you guys want. Gamescom is where they're going to show that mode. But so keep on waiting, sir. Thanks for the call.
So let me ask you this question.
Yes.
What are they going to show at E3 for Call of Duty?
Multiplayer.
They already did. We literally just played multiplayer. They just showed it.
Multiplayer.
So they're just going to do the reveal event again.
Yep. Multiplayer.
Yeah, you're smoking it.
Okay. All right. So let me ask you this, Paris. You went to the Destiny reveal event, right?
We've already gone down this road. Yes.
Okay.
I know.
I'm just saying, they show the same exact thing. It's Activision. That's the way how they are, man. Always been that way. They save the best for last. Always. They're not going to show Blackout E3. Mark my words.
But here's my counter to what you just said. Since you want to use Destiny 2 as a comparison, Destiny didn't show anything different at E3 or Gamescom. It was the same.
Paris, check out the history of Call of Duty.
He's telling you the history of what Activision has done with Destiny. So,
Look, even during the interview, it sounded like they're not ready to talk about it. They're like, yeah, we'll talk about it soon, later.
Yeah, because they don't want to accidentally slip and drop something that could be used as a soundbite or a clip.
I've been saying it for
a while. E3 is where they drop their VR mode, bro.
So you guys are going to give me props when they don't show it?
No.
See, yes. You guys never going to give me props. Regardless. Paris will. Thank you, Paris.
I will, because I do. To me, it does not make sense to have to announce a mode. See, okay. Again, I'm going to pull it back. So if a year ago at the Destiny reveal, if they said, hey, we got this mode, but we're not going to talk about it right now. And then at E3, they didn't talk about it. And then at Gamescom, they didn't talk about it. And then you don't get it until launch. That would be one thing. But they literally at this Call of Duty event say, here's this new mode. It's going to be amazing. So you got people talking about it. So then the next time that we're going to talk about Call of Duty, you're just going to say, hey, we're still not going to talk about it. Just look at the same thing that you saw last time. Slap you on the ass. Have a good day. Yeah, you know, to me, it doesn't make sense that every interview that they're going to have at E3, which will be included with, because think about it, we'll sit down with Call of Duty devs at E3. We still can't talk about Blackout Mode, because what else are we going to talk about? We literally have already asked all the questions we can about the multiplayer just 2 weeks ago. So now we're going to go to E3 in another 2 weeks and ask the same questions again. We can't talk about this new mode.
I think they will talk about and have more information, but they're not going to show it until Gamescom.
Then why not show it? So they're going to be. I can't believe we're spending all the time on this.
It's not going to be playable. That's not what
we said. We said they're going to show it there. All I'm saying is you're telling me they're not going to at least show it at E3.
Wait. First, you guys were saying hands-on multiplayer. And now it's showing it?
When did we say that? We didn't say. Now you're making stuff up. You're making stuff up to moonwalk your argument.
Back. I just don't see them. Maybe they'll talk about it a little bit more, but I think they're going to save that for Gamescom. That's just me, man. Playable and all.
Oh, okay.
That.
I'm going to go on the record. On the record. This is my final statement on this. I believe that they will show the maps, the number of players, the vehicles, and they will, it may not be hands-on playable, but they will show actual gameplay from this mode at E3 so that when we sit down with a developer, we can continue the conversation about this mode. Now, here's where I will throw you a bone. If it's not playable at E3, then yes, the actual hands-on will be playable at Gamescom. But as far as getting information about the game, that's happening at E3. We will see that mode with a video of gameplay at E3.
If they show the game and have more information, maybe we'll be at the Sony PlayStation press conference or showcase.
I don't even care what press conference it's at. I'm saying they have a marketing deal
with Sony. So
yeah, it'll be
if
Sony.
They are. Yeah. If they are going to see it, then it will be there. But Playable, in my opinion, behind closed doors. It's going to be straight up Gamescom. It's going to be straight up Gamescom.
And so I don't think they're going to do the Magic 100 player. I think they're going to do something 60 to 70, maybe 80 max. The reason I say this is, and here's why. So Drifter is somebody in the YouTube community that I've met at various events, and I've followed his stuff. He dropped a video last week that went through, because Dave Vanderhaar said it's 1500 times larger than Nuketown. And he went through the math of figuring out, you know, how big Nuketown was, and then in relationship used that to determine how large what he determines is the map is going to be. Cause obviously they haven't given that, but that this is his estimation and so on. It's going to be about 4.5 to 5 kilometers by 4.5 to 5 kilometers. So it's going to be just slightly larger than, the Codename Savage or Sandhawk map for PUBG. And a little bit smaller than the Fortnite map. It's not going to be the 8x8 that we see on PUBG and stuff like that, because that's way too big. And that goes counter to the nonstop high paced frenetic action that a Call of Duty multiplayer title goes with. So I think they're not going to do something as large. They're going to do something a little bit smaller, which encourages quicker gameplay. And I agree with Paris. If they're going to do anything, it's going to be the reveal at E3, maybe Playable at Gamescom, and then just after Gamescom is when they release the beta for Xbox Live and or PlayStation 4, just to test their servers and stuff like that, because that's going to be a highly anticipated mode. People are going to want to play it. They're going to want to stress test their systems heavily so that they don't get hit with that barrage of players and they're not ready for the players or the media blitz that comes afterwards saying that they were unprepared.
Yeah, they should have that as a beta. If they put multiplayer as a beta, it's a huge mistake.
I just don't want them to do too much, and then people get burnt out and they don't play the game.
Yeah. All right, you want to play the next voicemail?
Yep. Here it comes. Voicemail number two.
What's up, Gamertag crew? I'm calling from Texas. So I just wanted to say that first and foremost, I'm still behind on the podcast. I'm trying my best to catch up because I have a question that I really want to pitch you guys, but I want to make sure that it already hasn't been asked in future episodes. So I'll hang on to that until I catch up. In the meantime, I'm at episode 738, and in one of your guys' fan mail questions, the guy had asked about artistic expression in video games, and I just wanted to add a little bit of input in there. I feel like you guys missed some of these indie games. Ori and the Blind Forest is one of the it was beautiful, right? And the soundtrack there. Speaking of soundtrack and indie games, Bastion, Transistor. Those games are artistic expression to the T. I find myself leaning towards indie games in general. Especially when it's a rich soundtrack, I find myself looking at the rich soundtrack tag when I'm looking for new Steam games. So I've always found it. Background music is really important. It's key. It's like 50% of what you're experiencing on the screen. So I've always found that really important, as opposed to some of these games, like I would say like Gears of War or God of War, where you've just got that movie score kind of orchestral, it's epic. Sure. But I find myself tuning that kind of music out. Halo. Well, that's a terrible example. As we know, Halo's score is iconic, but you know what I mean. So maybe my question this time would be, how important do you guys think soundtracks in video games are? Because, like I said, indie games seem to nail it, and it's half the experience, So anyways, keep up the good work, guys, and thanks in advance if you play this voicemail. All right, keep it up.
Thanks for calling in. I love music in video games. I think it sets the tone. It sets the mood. When you're going into a boss battle or encounter, you always hear the music start to ramp up in order to get you excited for it. So I think it's a thing, right? It's something that people look forward to. But there's also on the converse, there's opportunities where sometimes I don't want to hear the music. Sometimes I'll just put on my own music on my headphones and I just don't want to, I'd just rather hear my own music preference at the time to go through that. So I think it's important, but I don't think it's something that's as important. That's something that's super critical or required for a game. And that's taken away the concept of sound. You know, I don't think I would want to play a game with zero sound, although I think that'd be an interesting, I think that would be something interesting to experience, right? Play a game where you're completely deaf and you have to go by all your other senses.
I have to disagree. I think sound and music soundtrack is super important to me. Like I've been playing still to this day. I play Thumper and any game. I play it, my iPad consoles. When I travel, I play on my Switch. Also, another game too that I've been playing a lot lately that has a great, great soundtrack. Highly recommend it. Is N++ puzzle game. Amazing. I think music is super important, man. You know, Cuphead, when the last boss battle, that song while I was playing against the battling out with the boss, dude, that was just freaking amazing. I love the soundtrack. It to me, it gets me more hype about the situation I'm in when I'm playing against a boss battle or something like that. So music is very important. Still to this day, I could play Final Fantasy III on my, you know, Super Nintendo, and that soundtrack is freaking fantastic, man. You know, so I know he mentioned Ori and other games. Yes, Ori has a fantastic, fantastic soundtrack, man. You know, and lately I've been playing a lot of indie games, man. A lot. You know, I have a lot of indie games on my Switch. So when I'm traveling, I have my headphones on, blasting the music all the way up so I can have a better experience when I play, man. So that's my opinion right here. So,
I think you missed my point, though, Danny. I'm not saying that it's not important. And with Thumper, it's a different experience because the music is the game. You have to play it to the beat. So it's kind of sad. So I would almost pull music based games out of that question. And I don't want you to get me wrong. I do think, you know, that sound or music in a game does have its importance, but there's times, and it's a preference. Sometimes I don't want to hear the music. Sometimes I would much rather hear just the sound effects. You know what I mean? And BR, I don't want to hear the game music. Or like if I'm playing like Call of Duty or, you know, another game like that, sometimes I don't want to hear the soundtrack. I'd much rather just hear the effects of the game. I'd much rather just hear the battlefield. Like if you're trying to go for immersion, you don't go into, you know, you don't go into war listening to headphones. You know what I mean? I'd much rather hear the sound of the world. So not in every game, just in some. Okay.
You want to say anything, Paris, or you're good?
I mean, there's not too much I can really add to that. I appreciate the voicemail other than to say, yeah, I mean, music is a critical component of gaming. Like I said, it is 50% of the experience. And like you brought up the Cuphead scenario at the end, it's like when you have music can drive you into a certain emotion when you're experiencing something, depending on how it's displayed. So, you know, God, I'm trying to think of, now I can't remember. Oh, no. Again, I know I talk about Destiny too much, but the music that was playing during the Wrath of the Machine raid on the final encounter where Axis, it had such an epic nature. And like literally, you can ask anyone that played that raid, a lot of people would actually turn the music off because it would just get your heart rate going. Like you know, it would get you so hyped up that you didn't even want the music playing because that's just how much that music moved you in that game. And I know he talked more on the indie side of gaming. I think it's even more important in an indie game because obviously indie game is going to be smaller. It's going to be more intimate. It's not going to have that big budget feel to it, but you could take music from an indie game and it could completely transform that experience for you. Again, depending on how it's used in the game. So I really like that question. I thought it was great, but I think Pete and Danny, you expressed everything I would want to say on it. So I'll be quiet and move on.
All right. Awesome, man. Great. Any more questions, Pete?
I think we should just do one more. I think we're kind of running.
Yeah, one more. One more is fine.
Here we go.
Hey guys, what's going on? It's Mike Alvarez, aka Hungry Bear from Miami, Florida. And Danny, I'm referring to episode 750, where you talked about live performances versus those pre-recorded ones. I personally prefer those live performances. I'm a big Xbox fan, and I was able to go to last year's FanFest And so I was able to see the press conference right there, the briefing, and I thought it was awesome seeing Phil come up there. It's cool to be able to see that stuff. I rather prefer that. I remember the reveal for Halo 3 back in the day, and that stuff just is it surprises me. It keeps me on the edge of my seat. You have the VGAs, those live things, all that stuff is really sweet. I prefer that rather than like a pre-recorded video. It kind of seems kind of cheap, especially for those people who they make it out there and then it's just a video. Like you could just watch that in your house. And then too much of that, you just start seeing E3. You know, a lot of people were complaining about the Coliseum last year. It didn't work. It was really, really busy. And so if you have all these pre-recordings, if the things don't work out that way, just less and less people will show up. But if you have that face-to-face value that, you know, you have people on in the briefing, they're talking to Phil, they're talking to all the different people, that's something special. So anyways, that's my opinion. I rather have, you know, something live than a pre-recorded video. It just seems kind of cheap having a pre-recorded video. You know, you see Phil with a shirt and you get hyped. So that's my opinion on it. But thank you guys for what you do. Keep up the hard work. All right.
I tend to agree with him. I don't want to go to a press conference and just watch a video because it almost feels like I'm sitting at home watching a YouTube video of a press conference. I don't know how I feel about that. But again, like I said during the show when we talked about it, it's a necessary evil in the sense that you want to go there to be able to gauge the live response from the crowd. You want to use the crowd as a hype man, so to speak, for the title or for the product or whatever it is that's being announced or unveiled. Mm-hmm. But let's not get it twisted. When we see the players on the stage playing live, and I'm using air quotes, that's not live. That's a scripted event sequence. So I agree. I still think that, yes, the press conferences are a necessary component of these shows, primarily to be able to gauge the live audience. And at the end of the day, it's a marketing thing. You want to be able to hype up the product or title, see the live response, but you truly want to get it to succeed. And the only way that you're going to get it to succeed is you got to bring it out there. You got to bring the dog out. You got to show it off. You got to groom it. You got to make sure it does its tricks. And then you send it back to the back of the stage. It's a need. It's necessary.
Yeah. I know you brought up about when they have like players playing like a demo, something like that, a developer playing a demo during a mm-hmm. press conference. Back in the days, they used to have it live, but every company had this situation where they're trying to show a game and they're actually playing live. Either the dev kit is not working or it freezes or something. I know years back they showed Assassin's Creed for the first time and they were actually showing a live demo. It was buggy. When they show it for the first time, it's just bad, right? Zelda had that situation too. Nintendo, Sony even had that issue too back in the day. So yes, all those are pre-recorded stuff, but to me, when they speak to the audience, mm-hmm. you hear the audience getting crazy loud. Like it's a different feeling, man. You know, like that to me is so special when they show Beyond Good and Evil for the first time. They announced it at the press conference. Was it last year or so? At the Ubisoft press conference, the crowd went crazy. You're not going to get that excitement based on just they show a video and that's it. But interacting with the audience and the audience back home are watching it, we all feel like we're connected into one, man. Getting that same feeling instead of just showing a trailer. You know what I'm saying? So I still to this day, I love going to the Nintendo press conference back in the days. I do miss it. Nintendo Direct is cool and all, but man, it's just that connection, man, face to face with whoever's on stage. It could be a developer or a producer or and so on. That to me is more profitable than just showing a video and that's it, you know. So that's why I always mention that. So Paris.
Not too much I can add to this because, you know, I've made it clear that I lean more towards I just think in today's society, today's way social media works, I don't think we necessarily need all these sizzle reel live events to display off, which is basically just glorified marketing campaigns. I get what you're saying as far as, yeah, there's those moments where like they showed up in Beyond Good and Evil 2 or announced it and the crowd goes crazy. I understand that. That's going to get people excited and all that. But that's getting people excited that are sitting in the crowd, not the other millions of people that are watching it online anyways. So I go back and forth on it. Look, we've obviously been very privileged that we get to see a lot of these things in person and get to experience that. But I'm trying to look at it from the majority of people. They don't have that experience. So I think for them, what's the difference between having a live crowd cheering because they see something or just getting something pre-recorded and sent to you via social media, YouTube, Twitch, or whatever the case may be anyways? I don't know, but that's just me. That's just my opinion. I can understand the importance of why, like even the caller said that, you know, he prefers that. I get it. But for me, it doesn't matter either way.
No, I agree with you, Paris, on everything that's going on now in today's society and stuff. But dude, let's go back when we watched a leaked video that somebody recorded the demo of Halo 2 for the first time that they showed at E3. The crowd was going bananas in that room, right? I'm at work, my old job, watching this video for the first time, and it got me excited because hearing the crowd's reaction to while watching that for the first time. And that was live. This is a time where I wasn't going to E3 at all, but watching that from home or from work, I was repeating that video over and over and over for like maybe almost a year, for months until the release of Halo 2. So that's the thing I'm trying to say. Like when people get excited at the venue they're at, I think they also will send that energy to the people that are also watching at home. I got that feeling, and I wasn't there at E3. You probably were there, so you probably got a different experience than me. You know, so.
No, I get it, and like I said, for back then, yeah, I get it. Totally makes sense. I'm just thinking now. I don't think it's the same anymore, but this is my opinion. I could be wrong. I'm not saying I'm right.
No, it's just a conversation. It's all good. It's all good. But it was cool. It was great recording this episode with you guys, man. You know, I'm pretty pumped up. Wednesday, we're not going to have a live stream because I already have some stuff recorded for Wednesday/Thursday episode. So make sure to tune in. Also, go to GamertagWario.com. Post your comments, feedback, share the content with your friends. Also, you can check us out, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories. If you have the chance, post a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. It will help us out big time to get, you know, climb to the top of the charts and get new listeners and stuff, man. So, and end the show. Thank you for listening to Gamertag Radio. If you'd like to donate and help us out for future events and more coverage and also better audio equipment, head over to donate.gamertagradio.com. That's donate.gamertagradio.com. Thank you.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.